Oh, that takes me back.
Janie, did I hear that Mary's voice coming up here? We got to get her singing sometime, huh?
I know.
Mary.
Mary. And Chewy,
you have
too.
A beautiful voice, and God gave it to you. So you should be letting us hear it, don't you think? Little Mary, what do you say?
That sounds fun.
So, are you ready to hear some thoughts that would be rolling out of someone that is doing her very best to practice what God wants her to do? You know, it's hard sometimes to really, really just turn, get your mind out of there and just turn your heart loose. But that's the best kind of talks, don't you think?
Yes.
And I believe that's what our Barbara is going to do for us tonight.
Yeah. You must be psychic.
I think this is our Barbara, and I am going to enjoy every minute.
Hello. I hope you all were here last week. Millie and I were both playing hooky in different parts of the country. And I heard it was great. So great that most of them didn't come back. But anyway, it's funny that last song we sang, because that really does take me back to the 60s. And I went back to the 60s last week. I went back to Western New York for my 35th high school reunion. I had never gone to a reunion before. That was a hoot.
45th?
35th. And 35 in a day. Don't add any more to it. Growing up for me, I was like a ping pong ball. I was actually born in Los Angeles, but when I was 2, we moved to Western New York. Lived there for about 10 years. Moved back to California for 2. Moved back to New York for 3. And then my junior year of high school, we moved to North Dakota, which seemed like the end of the life for me, you know. California and New York were cool, hip places, but North Dakota was cruel and unusual. But it was. It was so cold. And that's what brought me back to San Diego. My senior year, I was looking at college catalogs for Puerto Rico, Hawaii, and I would have gone to anywhere warm. But San Diego got me, and here I am 35 years later, but who's counting? But one of the things, so going back to this reunion, and actually I didn't really graduate from this school in New York because we moved my junior year, but I had known these kids since kindergarten, so it was where my heart was. And so I went back and crashed the reunion, if you will. But I also went back to my childhood church, which was a Methodist church in this little town of East Aurora. And I'm going to pass this around. This is what the exterior of the church looks like. But inside, the church was built in 1922. It has all original Louis Comfort Tiffany stained glass windows. To me, they're the most incredible stained glass windows in the world. And I grew up with them. And they are so valuable, they can't afford the insurance on them, so they don't even insure them. But if you were ever in Western New York, and could, these pictures don't do them justice, but it's really beautiful if you want to take a quick look. You know, I had a couple days of seeing people I hadn't seen in 35 plus years, and a lot of them I didn't recognize, and a lot of them didn't recognize me, but that's okay. And I wasn't the oldest looking nor the youngest, but that was okay too. So I had these thoughts, you know, can you go home again? Well, it was interesting because that church, when you see it, it's a very much an old-fashioned church. And as a child, I would sit out in the pews, which I met my stepmother there. And, she met me on Sunday for the service. She lives in Rochester. And she's like, wow, they got cushions now. I mean, these were just hard wooden benches that you, as a kid, really squirm around on. But I used to watch my dad up in the front singing solos there on Sunday mornings. And I thought, you know, some things wouldn't change, I thought, and this church would be one of them. Wrong. I don't know how many of you have been to churches where they have projectors and they put the lyrics up on the wall. next to the stained glass windows from 1922, suddenly they're projecting these lyrics that, oh, I was just like, this, my childhood church has changed, but this is what they need to do to be part of the 21st century. But they did sing one hymn from the Old Methodist hymnal. Janie can relate to the Old Methodist hymnal. So that was comforting, because a lot of other things were different. But I know they might think us singing Try to Remember and Fly a Kite is a little untraditional as well. So you go with the flow, you know? And I'm trying to avoid putting these glasses on, but I need to for a second. There we go. Wednesdays in my life are a very book day. I work in the morning, then I go and do about 6 hours of volunteer work at San Diego Hospice, and then I leave there at 7, and I pick up Jane, and we get here by 7:30. And hospice, that environment, it causes me to shift my energy. And I realized that all the years at this church, and especially doing the healing, have in large part prepared me for doing hospice work, because as I enter each room and I'm with each patient, I'm stepping into their vibration. I'm meeting them exactly where they are. And the old me that these kids from high school would have known would have said I was really shy. It was interesting what they thought of me seeing me again. They're like, oh, I remember you were the one who could do speed reading. And I'm like, well, I lost that. I could sure use it now, because it's taking me forever to read books now. And they said, and you used to have such long hair, you know? And I'm like, okay, that's what... But what I remember about me is the shy girl. I was bright, but I was shy. And now as I stand at the nurse's station at hospice and I say, okay, where are the needs? And they call out room numbers and such needs this. I'm like, okay. And I stand outside each room and I say a little prayer before I go in each one, and you're supposed to knock on the door. Even if they're comatose, you give them a little knock. And then you go in and you don't really know what you're walking into. Because the nurses don't have a whole lot of time to prep you. And on my very first day of volunteering at the actual hospice center in Hillcrest, they sent me to a room where the patient had already died. They didn't know that, nor did I. And I thought, boy, she's quiet. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, wait a minute, she's not moving. Yoo-hoo! Okay, but I digress. Because the point I really want to make is that stepping into people's energy and meeting them where they are means you really have to put aside your own ego for a while. And that's sometimes hard. And hospice is certainly a place to do it, but I would venture to guess that there are times throughout our day that we all need to put ourselves aside in order to truly be present with whomever we're engaging, whether it's the grocery clerk who's suddenly swearing for some reason, or a coworker or a neighbor who's dropping her groceries as she steps out of the car. In those moments, it's an opportunity for us to get to that God place and put aside our own egos and our own needs. Tonight, or before I came here, I went into the room of a gentleman, and all the nurse said was, he's a hoot. I'm like, okay, I just came from a reunion. That was a hoot. Give me a patient who's a hoot. So if you haven't been to hospice, every patient has an individual room, and then at the end of the room, they either have a little balcony or a private patio. So I knock on the door, and I go in, and he's on his little private patio in a wheelchair, and he's smoking up a storm. He's dying. Who am I to begrudge him his last cigarette? On the other hand, I have asthma. I need to stay away. So I thought, okay, I'll go check out the next room over first, and I'll come back. So he saw me. He wheels in. Who are you, and what do you want? Well, he's a young man. I couldn't make it out right away, but he's wearing this T-shirt with big red lettering, and all I can best explain is it's the F word followed by the word cancer. You know, he's got something to say to the world about the fact that he's in this place dying. So he said, close the door so my smoke doesn't get. I'm like, okay. And who are you? And I said, well, I'm a volunteer. Well, what are you volunteering for? I'm beginning to wonder myself. So I said, well, I'm here just to see if you would like to talk. Well, yeah, until I hear from my girlfriend, yeah, I'll talk to you. So he said, my name is James. And I get closer. He's covered with tattoos. He's got a bandana. He's got a wheelchair that's tricked out with all kinds of stickers, and this guy's ready to roll. And I said, so what's going on here, James? And he said, you know, I was diagnosed on April 1st with lung cancer and bone cancer, and it wasn't an April Fool's joke. And he said, the doctors tell me I have 1 week left. And he said, and he really looked pretty young. I said, so how old are you? He said, 45. And he said, and I've got kids. How many kids do you have? 9. I said, you've been busy. You know, my filter was, you know, he was so irreverent that, again, meeting somebody in their space is, you just kind of go with it, you know? So, well, James, you were busy. Yeah, one I didn't even know about until last year. And I'm like, okay. So I said, well, how old are your kids? And he said, 25 down to 5. And he said, my wife died last summer of cancer. And I said, how are the kids handling this? Well, they've been through grief recovery once. I guess they'll do it again. What do you say to somebody who's buried his wife and now is dying and is leaving behind 9 children, the youngest one 5 years old? You certainly don't condemn him his last cigarette nor his t-shirt. You just listen. And he said, well, I guess I, so he says, I guess I do need to talk. I realize that each time I tell my story, it gets easier to accept it. But he was mostly looking down at this point. And then I said, well, what are your spiritual beliefs? And he said, you know, I wouldn't call what I believe in God or Jesus, but I believe there's this great creator. And I said, I believe there's a great creator too. And I said, for me, I believe there is no death, that we're still connected to our loved ones. And he goes, yeah. He said, they've been showing up all over the place. I said, are you seeing them in your dreams? He goes, no. They just walk by. Some of them I didn't even like. And they keep coming back all of a sudden. And I tell them, I am not ready yet. And I said, well, I think you could tell the ones you don't like, you don't need to visit again. But the ones who really love you are coming to help you know it's okay. You know you're going to be okay. Then he started reaching for the cigarettes again, and I had already coughed through 2 or 3, and I knew I had to pick up Jane. So, you know, he was so fascinating, and his journey was so incredible. I could have talked with him all night, except for the cigarettes. But and people ask me, you know, when you leave hospice, don't you feel bad? I mean, don't you take it home with you? And doesn't it make you sad all the time? And I'm like, you know, I can't change this guy's fate. I can give him hope. I can tell him that my brother was diagnosed and told, you've got brain cancer and you've got about a month, so go home and get your affairs in order. And then my brother proceeded to say, don't accept it, and lived another 10 years. I can give him hope. I can tell him that God works miracles every day. And I can say to myself tonight that for an hour, I gave him another person to tell the story to help him come to a greater level of acceptance. maybe that's not, well, it's not enough, but it was something. I gave him something. I want to read a little couple of verses from Matthew chapter 6. And it's those wonderful verses. I'm actually using a version of the Bible tonight called The Book. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's, they put it in a slightly more modern language. So Jesus is talking to his disciples and says, "You cannot serve two masters, God and money, for you will hate one and love the other, or else the other way around. My counsel is, don't worry about things, food, drink, clothes," and I would add to that the stock market, your car payments, you know, which, will you get asked out or not? So, and Christ goes on, he says, "For you already have life and a body, and they are far more important than what to eat and wear. Look at the birds. They don't worry about what to eat. They don't need to sow or reap or store up food, for your heavenly Father feeds them, and you are far more valuable to him than they are. Will all your worries add a single moment to your life?" You know, is there, I would, if anybody can think of anything that really is deserving of worry, call it out, because I was, we all worry, but do any situations or things really deserve our efforts to worry? I don't know. "And why worry about your clothes? Look at the lilies of the field. They don't worry about theirs. Yet King Solomon in all his glory was not clothed as beautifully as they. And if God cares so wonderfully for flowers that are here today and gone tomorrow, won't he more surely care for you? Oh, you of little faith." Most of you know my story, which was that I worked for a job for a newspaper for 25 years, and last year they cut it in half and cut the salary in half and took away my health insurance. And I, more than worry, I went into instant stress and fear. A whole range of emotions. I went through them all. But I got to acceptance pretty quick. And, you know, that's what terminal people have to do, is figure out what their own personal journey is to acceptance. But worry just subtracts minutes from our lives that could be spent truly living life. And I'm grateful for my hospice patients who show me how precious each minute of our life truly is. This man may only have one more week, only one more interaction or two with his children as the five-year-old stick more stickers on his wheelchair. Maybe just another one more round of hugs or two. But all of us really need to learn to live in these moments in between complacency, excitement, boredom. You know, we have these whole range of feelings and attitudes toward life in our day, in our week. But there's Yolanda, another angel. I don't know. I guess I really don't have much more profound to say, except that I would challenge all of you to think of this man, James, when you start to worry and realize you don't have anything to really worry about, because God is going to clothe you and feed you and be there for you and send you angels, your loved ones, in your last moments to help you on your journey home. You know, if we can get past the worry and the fear and really enjoy life, oh my gosh, it is incredible. Getting a few head nods. I mean, this woman here has taught me so much in the last 20 years about living life. And I feel like I wasted a lot of years, but I'm now figuring it out, and I'm hoping I'll have many, many more in this journey to keep living fully. But if I start to worry, slap me. Because I know I can worry. I'm going back into school in 2 weeks, so it's real easy for me to stand here today and say, ah, don't worry. And why I would worry over graduate school and grades is so silly, because I'm already doing the work I'm meant to do. I'm already at hospice. I'm already having my soul filled as I help comfort somebody else. And God brought me this far, so why worry, you know? So I'll call you on your worrying if you call me on mine. And thank you for this time.